Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another amazing gay feminist episode of Blood, Sweat, and Strife, the greatest podcast you've ever heard. I'm Mason. My pronouns are she, they.
I'm Jeremy. This better be the only podcast you've ever heard.
And your pronouns?
He, him.
Cool.
And I'm Isabel. My pronouns are she, her.
And I'm Francisca. My pronouns are whichever pronouns. Does whichever cool. exist in English? I don't know. Who cares? I don't respect the English language, so.
Already with the shade.
Already starting.
So yeah, today we're going to be discussing a lot of different things, but it's all going to have one theme, and that theme is intersectional feminism. And in order to talk about that, we couldn't really think of anybody better but our friend Francisca, because she is very knowledgeable on the subject and a very passionate speaker and poster, and we wanted to highlight her and give her the spotlight. So, how are you doing, Morta?
How am I doing? I'm really full of rage in this period, let's say, apart from other stuff. But I'm doing pretty enraged. Pretty enraged that, okay. Yeah, let's say, yeah, that's a good thing to admit, I would say. So, yeah.
Yeah. And why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Okay, so I'm a person from... I'm 20 years old. I'm a person from Sardinia. Probably, I don't know what's your demographic. Where are people that listen, like, from? Did you look at?
Leftist Discord servers.
Okay, but like
so far,
like global, we're a little or too US? New. Global or US?
We want to reach as many people as we possibly can.
We're trying to reach global.
Okay,
we're
not, so okay, let's.
Admittedly,
talk.
a lot of our shows have been focused on American stuff, like the Cold Wars and the the Velvet Scare and so forth.
Okay, so
did you just say Velvet Scare?
Yes, I couldn't remember.
Yeah, it's the lavender scare.
Lavender scare.
Oh, well, oh yeah, it's there okay. It's okay. We also like velvet, so you like lavender and velvet.
Velvet is such a nice texture to feel.
Yeah, like
it's
so gays nice. Usually love velvet, unless they're autistic too. That like you know sometimes. Yeah. Yeah, but
that's true.
Yeah, that's actually true. Okay, so I went on a tangent. Okay, yeah, what was I saying? Yeah, I'm a person from Sardinia, so let's give, what is Sardinia? Okay, it does have to do with sardines, if you're from an English-speaking country, because that's, like, sardines are from the Sea of Sardinia, okay? So that's why they're called sardines, but it has nothing to do with Sardinia in itself. Sardinia is an island inside of the Italian state. We are now inside of the Italian state because we were bought by the Savoy kings, which only after more than 100 years later became the kings of Italy. So Italy was built after the Savoys became like a rich, prominent, what's the word in English? Like king house, you know what I mean? Like,
castle?
No, like a rich, prominent, like, oh, noble family. Let's say, like they enriched themselves even more thanks to this process. They bought Sardinia. They became owners of the island. We had a anti-feudal revolution, which is not studied in school. We don't study in the Italian school. Very, 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 very nice. Like, there's, like, a very famous song about it that maybe I will share. Like, I will give you, like, resources that you can put in the what's it called, the thing under YouTube.
The description.
Yeah, in the description.
Oh, not homework. Come on.
No, not homework. Like, you read it and you're like, oh, such a fun little song. And then go home. And, we speak other languages. The subways immediately, they imposed Italian on the institutions. Almost immediately, I'm going on too many tangents. People don't know the history of the Italian language, but anyway, so we are owned. So let's say that this legacy of being, let's say, bought by these kings and being like an asset, an ownership for them, was then our material situation. Was then brought to the present day, like even of the inside of the Italian Republican state of today, after the end of World War II, we still live inside of this kind of situation where Sardinians don't know, because we don't study our own history in the Italian mandated state school, but they feel that something is wrong. And we are the most militarized land in Europe. 60% of the military bases are in Sardinia. We have NATO bases, very big, people get cancer. And pertaining to the present situation, for example, the other day we had like an US submarine going around Sardinia because, of course, about what's happening in Palestine. So we speak other languages. We speak mainly Sardinian, which has like two, three variants. We all mutually understand each other. And then there are the Corso Sardinian languages, Sardinian Corsican languages, which are basically languages. There are two of them, and they're born out of context with Corsica. Two different kind of contexts, because they're like, one is like bourgeoisie context in a city, and the other one is came from Corsican migrants escaping from Genoese persecutions. But anyways, out of this tangent, so I speak two of them, and yeah. Okay, finished. Mason, ask me questions. You know that I will speak for a lot of time if you let me see.
I was just letting you go. Like, that was all very cool and interesting. And it's a history that, like, a lot of people, especially us Americans, because we're not really taught about the rest of the world, like, we don't really know about that stuff. I didn't know what Sardinia was until I met you, right. And I'm, like, embarrassed to admit it.
I'm willing to bet 99% of Americans don't know there's, like, major NATO bases in Sardinia.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
yeah, yeah.
Also, Gramsci was Sardinian. Yeah,
Antonio Gramsci, I didn't realize
a lot
that.
Of Sardinians, he would have gotten mad if he saw that on the internet he signed as an Italian intellectual. He was an advocate for Sardinian independence. Mm. Of course, he had his own faults. Let's say that he had that mentality. There's all of this bourgeoisie construction of what Sardinia is and who Sardinians are, inferior savages, stuff like that. And he a little bit had that in his mind. You can see that a little bit through some of his writings, but it didn't influence that much what he said about... Yeah, he really believed in Sardinian independence because, of course, we didn't decide to be in this situation. Also, we have the highest suicide rate in Italy. Like, it's double that of the whole peninsula.
Oh, wow.
Like, more than double, yeah. Like, in the whole peninsula, it's like 5.5 per, like, 100,000 inhabitants. And in Sardinia, it's like 11.5. Yeah.
Wow. So that's pretty indicative of some major imbalances there, to say the least.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Not a good situation at all. Yeah, yeah. Also, Yeah, like it, for language nerds, because I am a language nerd, Sardinian is like a language which, okay, it's basically Latin, okay? Like you, literally Sardinian is the closest language to Latin that there is. But inside of the language, there are actually new studies came out. There are words we you don't know the etymology. There are, of course, probably like proto-Sardinian words before we were like influenced by the Roman Empire. And some of these words are very similar to Basque, to the Basque language. So it's really, I don't know if you know what the Basque language is, but it's like a language which is not Indo-European. It's between the north of Spain and France. And like, they don't know the etymology of it. Basically, it's interesting. And the Sardo-Corsican languages are basically, like it's Corsican put on top of Sardinian. Also bilingualism mechanisms influenced it. And so, yeah, I also try to do language conservation. Something about me. I'm really obsessed about language conservation. Every time a language dies because of European colonialism, I want to kill myself. Okay, no, I don't want to kill myself. Yeah. I don't want to be in the Sardinian statistics.
You don't want to be a statistic.
I'm so sorry.
I mean, it is genuinely tragic when a language dies. It because, is. Like... That's a huge part of a people's culture. That's their storytelling. That's their poetry.
You're
that's
losing
their
everything.
Music, like, yeah, exactly. Like that's how you know things are like really dire.
Yep. I mean, cultural genocide is a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. When you lose the language, it depends on how you lose it. It like there are some ways in which like some languages can die, but they die in a way in which things are not lost, like the knowledge from that language is not lost. Because maybe like there was maybe an actual active choice from the population to like start in being bilingual, to maybe interact with other people. So then you don't lose the knowledge from the other language, you just transfer it into another, like, you know, these processes. But the language extinction that we are facing all around the world is tragic, even from a feminist standpoint, from an eco-feminist standpoint. You are losing like ecological knowledge, also other ways to think about gender, other ways to,
and just the world in general.
Yeah, you're losing entire, like you're losing pieces of humanity's history.
Right. Yeah. I don't think enough people appreciate like what we can learn from a language just by itself, like how it's structured and where the emphasis is placed and different things and what you can learn about a culture from just the language. And it's really sad to see how many languages we're losing so rapidly right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, like
also just from the point of view of like an English speaker and a consumer of like art and poetry, like I found that there are some works when translated into English actually still work very nicely and the original like essence is there, but I feel like some of the beauty is lost. Like there has to be some beauty lost in changing a person's words to fit another tongue.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, unless it's the actual artists themselves like translating, that's another situation, because maybe the artist knows how to bring the meaning of the words to the other languages. But, oh yeah, also I wanted to add, this is like, I have to say it or I feel like I'm saying something inaccurate. Of course, the Sardinian language is not just Latin. That's how a lot of people will love to describe it, because often Sardinians are described as if we don't have like our own history, our own agency. So like, oh, it's Latin. Yeah, it was brought by the Romans. And yeah, it just went over. Like, there were no languages. People did not exist. Latin people just brought this language and it was used. And yeah, no, that's not. Because, of course, it also has many Spanish influences. We were owned by Spain for a lot more years than we were owned by the Savoys. But there is clearly something about it which comes from Sardinians themselves. Yeah, that's what I would say. Like, there is an influence of the languages spoken before. Yeah. Yeah, so you want to talk about ecofeminism? What do you want to talk about, Mason? Say, interrupt me.
Okay. So I think before we go into like all the different like branches of feminism and like the specific types of feminism, I think it would be good to just describe really quickly like what intersectional feminism is.
Okay, let's see this also from the communist standpoint. This is very recent. I saw a lot of things online recently, often from like men communist spaces, or even like from other like trans feminist comrades of mine. Also, trans feminism is the same as feminism. If you're not a trans feminist, you're not a feminist. But anyways,
co-signed.
It's just like feminism better. Okay, what's trans feminism?
I'm here for it.
It's the actual feminism developing itself even more. If someone said that they're trans exclusionary, if someone is a TERF, they're not a feminist. But anyways, yeah. Okay, so let's actually talk about this because it has been on my mind for a lot of time. Basically, I want to talk about this because it's a thing that's been on my mind. I saw from a lot of like communist men, but even especially like in feminist circles, like even fellow trans feminist comrades, talking about all intersectional feminism has its limitations, it's liberal, blah blah blah. Okay, I want to like make a clarification about this. Intersectional feminism doesn't mean anything. Okay, so basically intersectional by itself is just a word coined by Crenshaw. I don't want to pronounce her name, her surname wrong. But it wasn't, from its start, it wasn't a term meant to mean something all-encompassing or like nothing more than this specific thing, okay? So she talks about how she wanted to describe how she doesn't live the experience of being a woman and a black woman, okay, separately, a woman and black separately. She lives as a black woman together. And these two things intersect together, mm-hmm. okay? And they create a specific reality. This is just where and of course she was also criticizing, especially white feminism in the US.
Yes.
Okay? But she wanted to describe this very specific thing. It wasn't meant, like, from the start, to be an all-encompassing term, okay? It was just to mean, oh, okay, we actually analyze reality in this way, mm-hmm. okay? So it's not that intersectional feminism has its limitations, because we established that intersectional just means this, like, it means keeping this thing in mind on different systemic levels. It wasn't meant, like, I don't know what to explain. Like, it's not that intersectional in itself excludes class.
Of course not.
Okay? Yeah, but a lot of people are like, they think that intersectional feminism is like a thing that like inherently excludes class. But that's not how the word intersectional started. No, it was just this very specific thing. Okay, so like saying intersectional feminism, you actually could say even just feminism. But some you but we are obligated to say, like, for example, black feminism or Afrofeminism or ecofeminism, okay, for example, because for in some spaces these things are not seen as inherent to feminism, okay, but they should be, because feminism has become like you are, feminism is the strive for liberation, okay? When we started to collectively understand, and a lot of people understood this way before, that white supremacy and patriarchy, in and of themselves, enable and permit capitalism, because patriarchy is permits capitalism. Without patriarchy, probably capitalism wouldn't have the structures, it would be very different, and the same would be as white supremacy. Like, we cannot imagine a history happening in a different way.
Yeah,
this is what happens, and this is what brought us to these conditions. So yeah. So yeah, I wanted to clarify this. Now, it's not that intersectional feminism is liberal. Intersectional just means this very specific thing. So it's basically just a method. The method is intersectional, but it doesn't mean anything else. You can be intersectional and be a person. You can try to be intersectional and be a person who doesn't understand shit.
Yeah.
It's not that, like, yeah, feminism is also about trying it, like, the basis of it. You try to be a feminist. It's not that you are immediately a feminist. This is a thing that a lot of people tend to forget, I think, yeah. Especially, yeah. Yeah. So, ask me a more specific question, like, anybody.
Well, I just briefly want to comment, like, you mentioned how, like, you've seen a lot of, like, left spaces that they say that intersectional feminism has its limitations and that it's liberal. And you have very clearly demonstrated why that's incorrect. But I just wanted to kind of briefly mention that a few years back, like, I think the sort of the term that was going around was IDPOL, which is just short for identity politics. And people apply this to, like, all sorts of things. Like, there's examples of, like, bad identity politics where people will, like, side with Kamala Harris on a lot of things and give her a pass on her career prosecuting trans people and making sure trans women went to all men prisons or vice versa.
Right.
But they'll still say, like, oh, she's a black woman, so that means that it's progressive for her to get elected.
With that smile, of course she did that.
Yeah.
Anyways, yeah.
Yeah. But, like, the term a few years ago was identity politics. Now, as people move further towards the left and they come into contact with more left terms, the term they're criticizing is intersectional feminism. But all intersectional feminism means is class is important, but there are other things in life that we should take into consideration, like race and gender and sexuality.
I would argue that it doesn't even say that. Intersectional feminism doesn't... I think that it's wrong in and of itself to call it intersectional feminism. Intersectionality is the method. It's one method. You can have many different methods inside of your feminist analysis.
Mm-hmm.
Intersectionality is this one specific method that you use, which really became really popular recently. Okay? But... keep going, and then I'll say what I want to say about this.
Okay. Sorry. But I think the best way I can sum up this term is the phrase, bread yes, but roses too. Bread is the class part of it. It's the class struggle. It is our struggle for emancipation from wage slavery. But it takes more than just bread to be a woman, and it takes more than just bread to lead any sort of decent life, so we need the roses as well. We need bread and roses. That's all I wanted to say.
Okay. Yeah. Also, like, jumping on the identity politic things. I thought you were about to say now people are obsessed with political correctness and wokeness.
Yes, woke has kind of, like, supplanted and, that.
Okay. What?
Yes.
What I see in a lot of, like, cis communist men, or, like, even just a lot of people in general, let's say, this hate, okay, a lot of people say stuff like, oh, here comes the feminist, they perceive feminism and queer liberation, even black liberation, a lot of people actually perceive it, especially white communists, you're bringing the liberal identity politics into it. Okay, these people deserve to go. No, okay. Okay.
Censored.
No. they perceive this as liberal, okay? But they're actually using liberal as a mask for their misogyny and racism. Okay.
Yes.
So
it really is like they get upset when topics are brought into the conversation that do not directly relate to them as a white cis straight man.
Yes, and they cover it with you're bringing this liberal standpoints, but let's actually analyze what they mean by liberal in this case. A lot of communist men, I heard them, liberal feminists, blah blah blah. What they want to say, that criticism coming from them a lot of the times is clearly misogyny, okay? Like, you can see that, because when they say liberal in those cases, you're bringing the identity politics first. First of all politics is identity politics. Class is about identity. Being a proletarian person is about identity. Your identity is who you are. It's not a fake thing. You don't, you're still a woman brain makes up patriarchy. That's what they want to say, okay? It's just like as if I said to a proletarian person, your silly poor brain is making up that you're being exploited by the bourgeoisie, okay?
Right.
This is literally what they're saying. Yeah. I wanted to make a specific point. Most people in the world are liberals. Okay, what do I mean by this? Most people in the world, men and women, don't understand the nature of capitalism, because we're not taught what it is. You have to search it by yourself. So all of this hate coming from men communists, these liberal feminist women, but they don't hate often as much liberal men, okay? It's just misogyny. Like, you just want to hate women and we want to cover it with a communist tint. Because...
Well, it's like...
Yeah.
I was just going to say, it's like they want to lay claim to being communists, but when it comes to examining the specific material realities that different people of different walks of life experience, they balk at the idea as though it's liberalism. It's like, well, that's not how this works.
Yeah.
If you're going to be a materialist, then you have to examine things from a materialist perspective. And if you're going to sit there and try to say that the experience of a black man and a white man in this country, for example, are not like materially different, then I don't think you're living in reality.
Yeah,
and the same applies for women and men just across the board.
White supremacy, which is inherently patriarchal, okay, doesn't make us live in reality, okay? Often white cis men, and yes, I'm gonna say the whole thing, because I actually noticed that of course, then we all have the ideologies of white supremacies in our minds. But often where the algorithm leads these people, the algorithm leads these people on the internet and the people they talk to, they don't think other people's lives are material. Okay, because they think that they have the monopoly, unconsciously, of course. A lot of people don't want to do this. Like, it's not an evil thing, okay? A lot of men don't realize, okay, that they have this ideological structure in them. But they want to have the monopoly on reality. No. Actually, a lot of them don't think that sexism is real, that transphobia is real. Even if they want to, they really, really want to help you, okay, there's always that making that joke, oh, now we cannot say anything anymore. So yeah, they want to have the monopoly in reality. So if you talk about, they think other people's problems don't exist. I remember an interview that Bell Hooks did, and I was like, same as her, I was always thinking about this. She was like, why? She said, I read books by patriarchal men. She was almost like about to cry in this interview. She was very emotional. She said, I always read books about patriarchal men because I'm interested, because it's a part of the world. I want to know what the world thinks. I want to know what people think. I'm curious. And she's like, aren't they curious about us? Don't they want to know our realities? Why don't they read our books? I had, I'm getting emotional because I had like personal problems about this with people, but like, why don't they read our books? Why don't they want to know? Are they not curious? And that's the thing about white supremacy and patriarchy. It makes the people in power inside of the system, let's say cis men, not interest, like, they don't even see women as people, but like, yeah. Women, like black women, like the whole thing of it, they're not interested in, they don't think we can produce ideas. And by we, I mean like most people who are not like cis white men. Mm-hmm. Borderline. And if it's in spaces where, for example, let's say, I don't know, Nigeria, okay, most men there are gonna think that the women around them, like, it does, there's not, okay, there's not the need for it to be a white man for there to be white supremacy or like patriarchy, okay, but this is like yeah. It stays there even if there's not the person physically.
Yeah, and like, so, yeah. I've noticed that, like, you talk about like patriarchy acting on like an almost unconscious level for a lot of people. Like, it informs, like, everything we do. Like, being raised as a boy myself, I was inundated with a lot of, like, just imagery and words encouraging me to be manly and to be masculine. And even my mom has internalized misogyny to a certain extent. I remember her, when I was a kid, like, telling my dad to get his balls back from my stepmom. And like, it's something that affects everybody. And like, I've noticed that, like, the patriarchs, just in my life in general, like, they want to be very controlling. Like, they want to control their families, and they want to control the people around them, because they have only learned to view these relationships in terms of who has the power.
Yeah. Yeah, that actually reminds me of something that I was thinking about. Actually listened to another podcast that we all listen to. I was listening from this man, which is part of like this podcast, saying, a lot of men always do this joke, right? Saying, ah, now with the political correctness, I don't know, what can I say? Oh my God. Like, and you can hear their frustration behind it, because if they're communist men, they're thinking, They're like, I don't know what to do because I want to participate in the revolution. I want to participate in liberating people. Okay. But I feel like I'm being criticized by all sides, right? Okay. You know what would really help them not feel that? If they actually thought, if they actually were able to let go, like to let go of control and thinking that they have to be the bosses for everything. For example, if you think about, let's say a revolution happens somewhere, okay? And there's going to be like, let's say men, they're going to be like, oh my God, we cannot say anything. Let's say that we are deciding what to do. What's the program in school? What are we going to teach kids? Okay. And I can already imagine a lot of men, and this already happens, saying, oh my God, like they having fights with women which took part in the liberation. You're criticizing me. I don't know what to do with this political correctness. I cannot say anything. Why are you bringing, you're disuniting the revolution or whatever. If they actually step down and realize you can be wrong, okay? I just need you to be out of control. I need you to be out of power, okay? So you can still not have deconstructed all of your patriarchy, all of your sexism, your racism, okay? But if you're not in control, if you're not deciding a lot of the systemic things that we need to do, if you're not deciding what's on the school books, if you're not the person deciding what we're going to teach educating kids, it's okay. You can work on yourself and nobody's going to shoot you, okay? You just need to step down and let the people who are actually trans feminist people who know how to, okay, let's raise kids, let's make the society, let's have a system which will liberate us from all of these different fronts. Let these people in control. Yes. And I think this, this frustration coming from a lot of men, a lot of comrades, comes from this, not accepting that they have to step down. You have to give other people power. Instead, make women do things, make trans women do things, make queer people decide, people who were feminists and like put their whole life into this to analyze themselves, to liberate themselves, to liberate other people, decide what to do, give them the power, give them control. But they don't want to. Yeah. That's where all of the frustration is coming from, because patriarchy says to men that you have to be in control, you have to be the boss. You have to decide what's going on. So they unconsciously get frustrated because they don't want to be criticized, because they still imagine themselves in these positions of power in a very patriarchal way, even through the liberation struggle.
Well, and then you get, I think on top of that, mm-hmm. They convince themselves that they're above things like racism and sexism, mm-hmm. because they're so enlightened when it comes to their political theory and so forth. And mm-hmm. it's just not how that works.
Yeah. I have a lot of thoughts on this. So, like, once again, we live in a patriarchal society, so patriarchy informs everything we do. And in a lot of, like, Western communist parties, there is a big problem with the gender distribution. It's overwhelmingly men. It's dudes. It's a sausage fest. And a lot of, yeah. like, women and queer people, when they go into these organizing spaces, are either met with hostility or they feel like they're not able to really participate as fully as they'd like to participate, or their careers in these parties are stymied by patriarchal men who are already in positions of power. There's only one party in the United States that I feel is a little bit better on this, because like the CPUSA is mostly men. But it's called the Workers' World Party. Like, I I'm not a part of it, so I can't really directly advocate for it. But the one person that I've met from the Workers World Party was a non-binary AFAB person taking testosterone. So I think that, like, from what I can tell and from their propaganda and whatnot, they're a little bit better on these issues, but I'm sure there's still more work to be done, as there is with, like, all organizing spaces, especially in the West.
I agree 100%. Also because a lot of, like, this ideology makes a lot of comrades, men, it can be even women, non-binary people, but it's mostly men, because that's where the ideology puts the ideology of white supremacy and patriarchy, like, really puts his its what's the fucking word in English, things that, like, trees have them
roots.
And they go in the that where the roots go, like, make themselves work more strongly, because of course they're in a position of power inside of it. They are just like Ben Shapiro and fucking, what's the psychologist one?
Jordan B. Peterson.
Jordan Peterson.
Jordan B. Peterson. They have inside of their mind, there's this ideology that the only right thing to do, and the logic, obsession with logic, okay? And, like, the correct way forward, okay, is basically, it's from these, like, romanticizing men thinkers in ancient Greece. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it comes from, so they unconsciously think that they themselves embody that. No, I'm the logical one. You are the woman,
exactly.
And you are stupid.
You're in hysterics, and your humors are misaligned.
Yes.
We must perform a hysterectomy.
Exactly. And if people don't know that, actually, the word hysteria comes from hyster,
mm-hmm.
Which is, is it Latin or Greek? Now I don't correctly remember, but which means uterus. So basically, you having a uterus makes you all funny or whatever. Like, you're very stupid, and you're we need you to calm you down. So, and this becomes exponential if you are a black woman. If you're a black woman, it becomes you will not be listened to because black women rage is seen as something to demonize a lot. Mm. Later I want to talk about racial patriarchy inside of war and how it plays. Let's talk about the Palestine situation later, maybe. I also wanted to say that most of my knowledge from feminism, basically black feminists made me have the knowledge that I have.
Shout
them out. Black Italian feminists and black American feminists. Like, that's where I try to get even Afrofeminism, but I knew Afrofeminism thanks to African American women and Italian, Afro-Italian women, which are feminists and also comrades, communists and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, that's the pool where I draw from. Like, these are the people, like, anything that I'm saying comes from me listening to this. Like, that's my feminism. Like, that's where I learned, like, feminist anti-racism made me a communist. Like, these people made me a communist. I could not shout out to you the names because it, like, thousands of people all over the internet for years. Like, I've been a feminist since I was 14, or like even 13. So I can think about Wissal Hobabi. I don't know exactly. I can think about Iman Skriba, but like a lot of people. These people are like Moroccan Italian. And from America, it's a lot of people, like, because like it's a lot of people from the internet. I don't even like I don't know. Then there's Baba, which is he's one of the people I learned the most from. He's like, he was raised in Italy by Ghanaian parents. Ghanaian? How is that pronounced in English?
Ghanaian or I Ghanaian? Believe.
Ghanaian. Okay, Ghanaian. Now he lives, it doesn't live in Italy, but this person, especially in the last few years, he's also a poet, but anyways, like I learned a lot from this person, like from the internet. We know each other because like we messaged, but like mostly from this person posts and analysis. Yeah. So, yeah.
I learned from a lot of people like Angela Davis and Audre Lorde, and just like really like the women in my life.
Oh yeah, of course, them. Yeah.
I adore like Audre Lorde. People who...
Yeah, I mean, like, I wasn't right now. I wasn't talking about like known people with like books out or stuff like that. I was talking about, okay, the Italian feminist. I want to shut this out. This is very important. The Italian feminist scene is florid. I think it's one of the best scenes all of, like all over Europe. Okay, these people, okay, these people are not known, right? Like, they don't have big books out, they're not academics, but without them, a lot of change that's happening in Italy or even Europe wouldn't be happening. Like, there's this whole section of the Italian like population which is now knowledgeable about anti-racism and black liberation, class liberation. Yeah, and without them, like, they do amazing organizing. Like, there's the migrant collective in Naples where they organize migrants through a communist standpoint, like liberation standpoint. A lot of people in Milan, I hope a lot of their stuff gets, they already do some things that they translate in English so that people more internationally can see, but their work doesn't get praised as much as it should. Like, I will put the links of these people profiles because Americans need to check out movements for feminism and from all around the world. Come on, guys. Just look out of your country. There's a lot of interesting things.
Run your horizons. And, like, if you want to learn about... if you want to learn about the conditions under which people are suffering, read from the people who are directly suffering under those conditions.
Yeah. And like,
now why should I look outside of this country when this is the best country on this gosh darn planet?
Because of that, Jeremy. Okay. Your eye as an American is so important because you have the monopoly on the internet. Whatever American TikTokers react to, whatever they share, gets like amplified all throughout the world. So if you just looked, for example, like, let's say that just one American TikToker, which has like 2 million followers or something, shares a video talking about, oh, there's actually this analysis on like the treatment of migrants by the European Frontex, okay? And they just talked about this. This would become immediately an international, like, this would be talked about internationally even more. So please do that more. Even if you talk about these issues just with your friends, Americans, please, let's get to the center of the empire.
Yeah.
Yeah, become a microphone that spreads everything out further.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes, please.
Would you guys like to take a short break and then come back?
Yeah, why not?
Okay.
Yeah, I gotta check on my chili anyway.
All right. So, we are going to take a short break, and then we will be back in just a little bit. So, stick with us. Nobody stop your recordings. but yeah, I need to, like, stand up and stretch and stuff.
Yeah, me too.
Okie dokie.
Oh, my back. Shit. Yeah, I'm not being clear when speaking.
What do you mean?
No.
That vape.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, it's break time. You can't yell at me about vaping.
No, I was about to tell you to give us another one.
Vaping easy. Ah. Oh, no. I know that.
Oh, fuck. I just knocked some stuff over.
Oh, shit.
It's a good thing we're on break.
Mason felt the rage.
Yeah. I'm doing that Citizen Kane room trashing scene right now. Feels so good to just stretch after sitting still for a while.
I need to stretch, actually, yeah. Me too.
Jeremy's back.
Oh, Jeremy.
Oh, damn. Yeah, I've been here for a little bit. I didn't know you guys didn't notice.
Anyways, you guys ready to get back into it?
Okay, yeah, let's go. I will pretend that I'm ready.
Let's do this proverbial thing.
Okay, everybody, talk a bit. I will be silent.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to... Actually, I'm going to leave some dead air in here so everybody be quiet, and then I'll be able to find this part easily. So just be quiet for like 10, 20 seconds, and then I'll say that we're back. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Blood, Sweat, and Strife. Once again, we are joined by our good friend Morta today. And we're chatting about feminism, intersectional feminism. All the women will listen to this episode, and they will go, oh, they're right.
all of the people, all of the creatures on Earth are going to listen and be like, oh, she is using this episode as a therapy session.
Oh, this is incredibly uncomfortable.
Yeah, like, damn, why is she doing it? And I'm gonna be like, yeah, I'm gonna be talking like to a pig. Yeah, I know, I was doing that. Damn. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. But yeah, since we've already discussed in the first part of this episode what intersectional feminism is, some of the shortcomings of the left, at least in the current day. There's a whole history of people on the left being misogynist that we could get into, but for the sake of time, we'll spare you that. But now that we are back, I wanted to ask you about how this new wave of anti-feminism, which is hawked by, you know, the Andrew Tates and the Jordan B. Petersons, how it's linked with anti-communism.
Okay, so, okay, let's try to make this. Okay, this is actually a very, very, we could talk about this like for hours because it's a very interesting topic, has different nuances to it. But, okay, let's make this kind of mechanical. Okay, so, what is the main feature of patriarchy? Like, one of the main features is of racial patriarchy. Is to to be obsessed with ruling over other people. But not only that, like being obsessed about being in control, like we talk about in the first part. So what is happening? In the latest, let's say, in the latest years, like I would say from 2016 onward, feminism actually took a global, a really global turn. We can see that with the Ni Una Menos movement. If you're from the US, you probably don't know what that is. It's not one less. That's what it means in Spanish. It's a South American, very, very widely indigenous participated in the regions of South America where indigenous people are not hidden, like in Argentina, but where it's a, basically a feminist movement, which is like the biggest creative, like the biggest, like, I don't know, like the cooking spot for feminism in the latest years. Okay, let's say. With this, we've also seen very, very wide, there's always been, okay, like fascism and like society in general, it's always been anti-feminism. Anti-feminism, anti-queer liberation, anti-black liberation, like even, yeah, and of course, anti-communist. And a lot of people don't know this, but even the, this is not something new. Even the early history of anti-communism was inherently white supremacist and like sexist. Okay, wait, Mason, yeah. You need to cut this part.
Okay.
No. You need to, like, I need to, no. I can't do this. Okay, wait a second. You need to cut this part. I need to make it really short. I will do this, okay, right now.
All right.
I want to take like count like 3 minutes, 5 minutes. I have the concept in my mind. I don't know when it's not coming. Okay, I'm really tired. Mason, I said this concept so many times.
Why is it not coming through? What you're looking to explain is how anti-feminism is linked with anti-communism, right? Okay.
Yeah. I want to explain how basically this anti-feminism, okay, it's killing communism. Because now most people that are communists, okay, and are literally like queer people. Because like the demonization, like this is, it's basically taken away, like already a lot of people were not communists. Now communism is being associated even more with, oh, you're a woman, you're so inferior. You're like, it's associated with, by these people on the internet, it's getting associated with queer people, which you have to hate. Yeah. And these people who want to destroy the West and our great Greek thinkers.
You're gay, you're trans, you're mentally canceled. Ill, you want to destroy the nuclear family, you want to destroy me as a
you
man.
You have blue hair.
You have blue hair and pronouns, mind you.
Yeah, I would have, yeah, actually I should have explained the blue hair trope earlier. On how, like, I saw a lot of communists. Like, when the blue-haired liberal woman is telling me, shut up, just try to make her a communist. You are mad that she cares about women?
Yeah.
like, they wouldn't be that mad if it was a man just being a liberal. No. They're mad because she dares to be not a communist but a feminist. Like, even if it's incomplete feminism, that person is at least trying, just help them to be a communist.
Yeah. Yeah, it's almost as if the two ideologies are intersectional.
Almost as if they don't exclude each other. Oh, no.
Yeah.
Funny how that works.
I don't know. Or maybe...
I mean, it's really fun to bash on liberals, but a lot of people act like liberals will always be liberals and their minds can never be changed.
Yeah, people don't understand. Like, really, I don't think people understand that we are all raised to be little liberals.
Yeah. It's like beaten into us.
There are two options, liberal or conservative, and don't think about anything outside of that.
Yep. Don't look outside of the United States, I said. How dare you? So tired.
I know we're just chilling, but I think some of what we just said I want to keep in the episode because, like, it was good. We discussed the issue that we had been discussing.
Yes.
What do you want to keep? No, don't keep me. This part, the me speaking, take the part out.
Just scrap the episode. No,
actually, yeah, just remove Morta from the whole episode. Yeah.
It'll just be these long periods of dead air with us randomly responding to things that nobody else
can. Yeah.
We'll put a movie in here or something, so it'll be like we're responding to the movie.
Tonight's episode has been deemed by Congress to actually be too fucking gay, so instead we'll be showing Birth of a Nation.
So wait, how did we
Birth end of a Nation?
How did we end the first part? Basically, we talk about, like, Americans having to look out in other parts of the world.
Yeah, and we also talked about how, I think we kind of ended on the note of people on the left need to try harder and do better to be more intersectional in their analysis, because we talked about that a bunch.
Yeah. Okay. It's not even about being more intersectional. Like, people need... The thing that I really like is that... This is what I always tell people. When a person wants to, like, start into the reading of communism, I always make them read first, like, eco-feminist stuff. And, like... Because there is communism inside of that.
Yeah.
So, I make them read, like black feminism stuff. So that then, when they come to the communism, like the actual maybe studying like strategies and stuff like that, you will immediately arrive to the communism, because already when you're reading black feminist stuff or like black liberation stuff, you're already in the communism. But then the person will actually start reading other, let's say, classic communist reads, which is just white communism, but anyways, they will be there, arrived there with already caring about actually all people. Okay? Because if you're not a feminist, you don't care about most of the world.
Yeah.
Like, right. And it's not just about women, it's like disabled people, other animals, literally, like, the climate justice. If you're not if you don't know that kind of stuff, you will be a communist, but in the back of your mind, subconsciously, there will not be the whole human population. Like, you will not be thinking about the necessities and needs of a lot of people, which I think makes your communism really, like, it's leaking everywhere. You don't care about most of humanity. You just have this idea of, yes, I want to liberate people from class oppression. Amazing. Okay, but you don't know what humanity is going through. you know what I mean? Yeah, because, like,
you're not taking the time to examine the rest of humanity and their material conditions. You're kind of hyper fixated on your own bubble.
Yeah.
And even if when you're hyper fixated on your own, you you don't even know your own, because if you're not a you don't know feminism, you don't know how,
right,
like you don't know yourself. If you're just a right. man, you're thinking with like subconsciously with this like white supremacist idea of the world, but you want to do good, you want people to be free from class oppression, okay? But if you're not a feminist, if you don't care about many other things, if you don't care about disability liberation, if you don't care about anti-speciesism, you really don't realize that there are a lot of things, like, you don't know anything, basically, because those things are affecting you. So even your own analysis of your own life, it's incomplete, it's leaking, like, it's wrong, it's full of wrong things, because you're analyzing history wrong, you're analyzing humans wrong, like, even from an anthropological level, because, like, patriarchy makes you think about the world in a very specific way, about history, about what humans are, and if you want to do an analysis, like, let's say in the classic way, like the materialist analysis of communism, if you want to do that, if you don't know what happens in people's life, if you don't know your own life, because you don't know these mechanisms, you don't know white supremacy, you don't know patriarchy, you don't know climate injustice, what are you talking about? Are you really knowledgeable about the world? I don't think you are.
One of my favorite sort of short phrases that I've come across is a good socialist is a good listener. Because in order to really, like, genuinely understand how to go about achieving the liberation of other people and to achieve your own liberation, because you are not alienated from the people, you are the people, you need to listen to as many people as you can possibly get your hands on. You need to read books from all over the world. You need to read books from queer authors, women authors, black authors, brown authors, Asian authors. Like, you need to actually do the work to understand what is going on in the world, how the world operates, and then you can actually go about changing it. The purpose of the worker in the world is to change the world. And the only way to go about doing that is with a correct analysis of the situation, which is arrived at by talking with and reading from other people.
And if you cannot bring yourself to care, like if you cannot bring yourself to actually, okay, I see the struggle of like the women in Aboriginal women in Australia, for example, and you, like, for example, as you cannot bring yourself to care, just have the courage as a communist to be ready to, you should not take the lead. Other, like, you should say, oh, okay, I cannot bring myself to care, but I know that I want this, like, to care, I mean, like, on a genuine, maybe deep level, but you want that change to happen, you want those people to have a different life, to have a better life, you just need to be ready to, oh, okay, so I'll listen to other people, I will take other people, I will follow other people's direction, like, I will listen to other people, and these people will maybe can tell me what we need to do, or what I need to do, so, like, there's nothing, you don't need to, like, do not be afraid. There are not feminists coming to eat you like a lot of amputate people describe and stuff like that. Okay, Mason, you cut this part of Andrew Tate and, like, just keep, there are not feminists coming to eat you. And this part can be kept, in my opinion.
I think we did actually say, like, a lot of really good stuff during that quote-unquote break. So I will be keeping parts of it.
No, I mean, like, this specific part of it. Like you know? Like, this specific part. Just this. I don't know. But Mason, I'm so afraid that you're not gonna take the correct parts.
You can hang out with me while I'm editing this if you want.
Yes, yes, I will be with you. Okay, I will call you. Okay. Oh no, my phone is okay. My phone charges backwards. Okay, so now I will have to turn off my phone and put the charger in again, and then it will start charging again. Because, like, it was at 4%, and now it's 1%. You know when that thing happens?
Yeah, yeah.
No, you don't.
I do.
You do? Really? I was made fun of by Amir because I need to buy a new charger. I'm not a technological...
I always just say that what goes on in my computer is none of my business.
I am technological, just in my own way. Come on.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think the recording session is kind of winding down. So, yeah. Like, all we have to do now is basically, like, say goodbye.
Okay, so, like...
Goodbye.
Good night. So, okay, let's say goodbye. Okay, how do we say goodbye?
Okay. All right. Let's get 10 to 20 seconds of dead air, and that'll bring us back. Hey, we're tired, so we're done recording for the day.
and we love rest because communists want to abolish
exactly.
Work, okay, we want to abolish wage labor, so we will be resting, and resting
is important. We all need to rest. I mean, like, anthropological evidence shows that in a lot of societies, like pre-capitalism, people just spend a lot of time doing nothing, and we're gonna spend a bunch of time doing nothing now. So keep an eye out for the next episode. It'll be out in 2 weeks, and we'll be talking to Mortis some more about particularly racial patriarchy, how that plays into war, and how anti-feminism is linked with anti-communism. So stay tuned for that later.
And I'm going to give you a lot of people more prepared than me to learn this from. But no, Mason, you will cut this part out that I just said. Cut it out.
Okay.
Okay, now you cut this part out, then now I'm gonna be silent. Okay, wait a second.
I just like to say anthropological evidence shows these nuts.
And it also shows that Americans need to check about the situation in West Papua Guinea.
Hmm.
They really need to know about that. Yeah. Very important. Americans listening to this, check that out. Okay? And also check out the Pacific Black Panthers.
Yes, yes.
Okay, good night. Good night,
everybody.
Okay. Good night, everyone.
Guten Nacht.
Guten Nacht.